It's thrilling to talk to Melissa Chalsma, one of the co-founders of Independent Shakespeare Company in Los Angeles, which was a go-to event for me and my family when we lived in L.A. for 15 years. And this summer, we're sort of coming full circle in the sense that, humble father brag alert, my daughter Daisy is doubling as Audrey and LeBeau in Independent Shakespeare's production of As You Like It. So, Melissa, I am thrilled to talk to you about the company and the production, and also thank you for hiring my daughter.
You're welcome. It is absolutely our pleasure.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 18th year, number 918, Independent Shakespeare Company. ...2024 marks Independent Shakespeare Company's 20th anniversary of producing free Shakespeare in the parks of Los Angeles. Artistic director Melissa Chalsma took time out of getting Indie Shakes up and running for the summer to talk to me about the origins of the company, the long-term relationship she's in with William Shakespeare, and Indie Shakes' upcoming production of As You Like It, which opens this Wednesday night, July 10th, in LA's Griffith Park and runs through September 1st, 2024. Tell me the origin story of Independent Shakes, because it's a huge arts event every year, free Shakespeare in Griffith Park every year. And I don't even know how long you've been doing it, but you have survived the pandemic. You have survived the weather. Tell me how you've managed to make L.A. a Shakespeare town when everybody knows it's not a theater town at all, and it's only just a movie town.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. I'm glad to hear that's your experience of the company, that it's a mainstay of L.A. Not to be too bleak, but you mentioned the wet, surviving the weather, and that is really an interesting phenomenon, because we did start over 20 years ago. Our first free Shakespeare with L.A. City Parks was in 2004. Mm. And back then, nights were consistently cold, and it never got so hot that you couldn't perform in the evenings. And over the years, we have all seen it get hotter and hotter and hotter, till now evenings are quite warm here in Los Angeles. And we've even had nights where it's actually not safe to perform because the temperature hasn't gone down. So that is my little, let's all do stuff about climate change, and not to bring this conversation down, but it is very interesting to have seen that in real time. We used to, in fact, when we were first performing in LA at Barnstable Park, which is a little park in East Hollywood at the top of a hill. And because it was on a hill, it was very windy. And our audience would start to get too cold at intermission because, of course, it's LA, so everyone's come in shorts and they have right. No belief that it might actually be cold. And we used to give them costumes we were done with to wear. That's how small our audience was. We'd be like, no, stay here. You can put on the robe. You can put on this trench coat from Polonius. We did that for a long time. And then one time, a blanket that we were using as a prop walked off into the Los Angeles night, and it happened to be our blanket, my blanket. So that was the time we thought, oh, maybe that's not the best idea. Not that it would be nefarious, but just that, you know, you actually don't know who's just borrowed your coat or what have you. Right. So we used to have to do that. We don't have to do that anymore.
I remember when we saw The Tempest, and I think was 15 years ago, the Ariel came out and drank some of my wife's wine, which is exactly what the kind of interaction I want at a summer Shakespeare.
Love it. Yes. Well, we definitely try to incorporate the audience as much as we can and to sort of bring the play out into the crowd. What I do love about performing in Los Angeles, and I have performed in a lot of Shakespeare festivals throughout the country, is LA audiences are just so chill. They just bring themselves to the park and they want to be part of it. And it's so informal. Like, I just find Los Angeles a really informal town. And I think our sort of performance style really meshes well with that, because we really love that relationship with audiences. We want it to feel maybe a little more like a concert or something where people are feeling very excited and interactive. And so that sort of has become kind of a hallmark of our productions, is how much we can actually in real time engage the audience, not just by speaking to them, but by actually giving them surprising things to do and ways of being part of the play, whether it's stealing their wine, which, by the way, you should not have had in the park, because alcohol is not permitted in Los Angeles City parks. So I'm very shocked by your behavior, bringing that wine to the festival.
Well, this is why we had to leave town.
Escorted
to the city limits. Well, and it's a myth that LA is not a theater town. There's a ton of fantastic theater in LA. We learned for the 15 years we lived there. It's not centralized, because nothing in LA is, and it's hard to make a living at it. But there's tons of theater, and maybe that's why LA theater audiences are so chill. They're so pleased to see a play, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. There is a lot of great theater in Los Angeles. I do think Los Angeles is a theater town in the sense that I think there is a large potential audience, and there are certainly a lot of very, very gifted artists. I think because it is so hard to make a living in theater here, it has a bit of a tendency to kind of happen in fits and starts, so that, you know, I have noticed over the years, there is a bit of a brain drain. Like, you know, so if somebody really wants to earn a living in theater, they might try LA for a while.
Right.
But then they might move, because there's just not quite enough paid opportunity here as theater artists. So that's a bit of a trade-off, but the benefit is there's so many amazing, especially young artists who come out here, who are so full of sort of energy and enthusiasm and new ideas. And there's also an audience that I think, as you said, is really eager for having theater experiences. The festival definitely is unique in Los Angeles, which is really funny, because obviously most American cities have one, two, if not three Shakespeare companies in the summer. And LA, although there are a number of, maybe there are certainly opportunities to see Shakespeare, I have noticed that our audiences tend to feel very, they're very large. And we know that a lot of the people coming to our festival are coming to plays for the first time, or Shakespeare for the first time, or they don't consider themselves theater goers. They come to the festival. And I love that, because then I think it gives us an opportunity to kind of be evangelists for the theater. And hopefully a lot of those people will then realize they are theater goers. And then seek out other experiences in Los Angeles. We definitely look at that idea of really wanting to welcome new people into the theater going community, because it is such a joyful part of human existence. And, you know, what could be better than having as many people as possible experience that for the first time? And hopefully a lot of them go on to see more, not just our work, but other people's work as well.
Well, and you, as you say, you've done Shakespeare in a lot of different places around the country. What made you go to Los Angeles to do Shakespeare?
Well, that is such a good question. I was pregnant. So David and I, who co-founded it, are married, and we were having our first child, and we were living in New York. And we'd produced a couple of plays in New York we'd also produced in London and France at that point, and we'd started this company. And which is its own very strange story of our first performances in New York. So maybe we'll circle back to that. But we were losing our apartment. So I was pregnant. We were basically totally underemployed actors, and we were losing our apartment. So obviously we panicked, and my sister had been living in Los Angeles, and she told me that the streets were paved with gold. And then she sent me a to-do list, and like number three was pick up gold off streets. And so we moved to Los Angeles and stayed with my sister for a while, and then kind of got ourselves oriented here and very quickly started producing theater here again, using as independent Shakespeare company, which up to that point had just been a couple, you know, we'd done, I think, two productions before we moved out here.
And putting on a show is one thing, is its own challenge. Putting on a show in a public space is another challenge. How do you navigate all those challenges of keeping the theater, of doing shows, first of all, but also then just keeping a theater alive and thriving for now 20 years?
Yeah, well, it is definitely a challenge. And I think the last 3-4 years have been so difficult, yeah, because of the, you know, obviously the pandemic, and during that time, then the cost of materials has gone up so much, and all of these, you know, there's sort of a lot of things are happening now at once that's obviously squeezing not just us, but many arts organizations, and indeed many human beings. Many people are just being squeezed right now. When we started this, we literally had no idea what we were doing. We had no intention of being theater producers, and neither of us had any intention of being directors. We absolutely thought of ourselves as actors, but we knew we wanted to act more. So I would say a lot of it came out of that urge to be like more employed, to do more work, to do more of the work we wanted to do with the people we wanted to do it with. And we took a lot of early inspiration from Ian McDiarmid, who was one of the founders of Almeida Theatre in London. The theatre space had always sort of been there, but he and Jonathan Kent were co-running this theatre. And that was how David and I was doing an Almeida production of Hamlet. When it came to Broadway, I was hired as one of the American understudies. Lovely. So David playing Rinaldo. And anyway, but Ian said, you know, never underestimate the power of your naivete when you're starting it. So I think for us, we just kind of embraced that, like, okay, we don't know what we're doing, but maybe that's a positive because we're not going to tell ourselves no as much. Mm-hmm. And so I think we learned on the job a lot. Like, for example, we've produced at this point now a lot of original work as well. During the year when we aren't outdoors in the park doing Shakespeare, we have an indoor space, and a lot of the work we do there is new work. Mm. And we were doing a musical that David had written called Red Barn. And at the day after the first rehearsal, we went to the first rehearsal, we got home, and we literally Googled, how do you produce a musical? Because we realized we really had no, like, this was, wait, we really don't understand how to do this. So yeah, that was, so we don't underestimate the power of our own naivete.
Hello, this is Elizabeth Dennehy, otherwise known as Lieutenant Commander Shelby from Star Trek Next Generation. Welcome to the Reduced Shakespeare Company's podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This fall of 2024, we'll be performing the special election edition of The Complete History of America Abridged in Illinois, Maryland, Virginia, Kentucky, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Colorado. Check out the touring page at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Melissa Chalsma, Artistic Director of LA's Independent Shakespeare Company. Tell me now about your relationship to Shakespeare, how you joined him, and why you chose As You Like It.
Yeah, I love that phrasing. Why did we join Shakespeare? I feel that is so true, that's really what I've done. And certainly David as well. Shakespeare is very alive to me, which I'm sure is something, a theme I'm sure for you, as you've talked probably in your life and in many people you talk to, that it really feels like you're in this collaborative conversation with this man who just happens to no longer be alive. You know, that's
right. But he does feel,
the incidental fact about him is that
he does feel alive, to be a new playwright in a certain way.
And so we're kind of in this long-term relationship, me and Shakespeare, And I think for me, it was really early on. I think the first time I performed in Shakespeare, I was probably maybe 17. I was in college. And I think it was almost instant. It really was love at first listen, I guess, not really first sight, but the way the language felt in my mouth, the way the language felt in my body, the complexity of the plays, the fact that they were kind of unknowable, you know, like you could see right away that how I experienced Midsummer Night's Dream as a college student is going to be very different from how I experienced it last year when I directed it, you know? So it's right. That you could, I think very quickly, I was just dazzled and besotted by the language that was in front of me and that was in my mouth and in my body. And so I really just have never looked back since that moment. And I think for me, I still have the feeling that when I'm working on a Shakespeare play, I'm always running to catch up. Like I'm always, you know, it's always at the peak of my level, wherever my level is, it's always at the top of it. And that's just a really extraordinary thing to be.
Yeah. His plays and his language are forever just out of reach on the horizon. But you keep we keep trying to get there. And every time we get a little bit closer, but it keeps receding away. My wife and I are in a Shakespeare book club. And we have read all of his plays in order with two other couples. And Dee observed that As You Like It feels like it was a play that Shakespeare wrote to give everybody in the King's Men a part.
I love that. Yes. What I love about that observation that Dee made is that I find this play is so full of these colorful, vivid characterizations that come in maybe even just for a scene, but they're so just vivid is the word I would use. It's a very vivid, vivacious play in that sense, especially as you get more and more into the forest. And I think my perspective this year is on maybe not the why of it, but one of the kind of impacts on an audience of that is that, especially as Rosalind is kind of, and Celia are moving into Arden, you know, it's a defying of expectations of what they're going to find, you know, that suddenly what they really find are these people with very complex relationships and very unusual personalities and very eccentric individual needs. And they have to kind of reassess the idea of who they are in the world.
Right.
You know, it's this kind of entry into the unknown. And so it's so wonderful that they come into this world where, you know, there's sort of all of these oddballs in one place, and it kind of highlights their fact that they're newcomers, you know, that they're experiencing this kind of almost like the Star Wars cantina, right? That you go into that as a viewer, you go into that and say, oh, it's so lively and different and unexpected. And it kind of gives you, it's a little unsettling. And I think so you're kind of, as Rosalind and Celia are just, and Touchstone are discovering, it's all a little unsettling, but in a very charming way.
And I like that word vivid too, because it feels like, and I also like Dee's observation, because it feels like Shakespeare wrote this play knowing exactly which actors he was going to cast. And there's a shorthand because he knows, oh, well, this guy can do this and this guy can play her and blah, 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 blah. You know, so there's, that shorthand where the performers are the thing that make the play, not necessarily the language and the play, but the performers are so central to the success of an As You Like It, I think.
I think that's right. And I would even expand that thought to say, I think that's really why, one of the big reasons why Shakespeare was able to create this absolutely extraordinary body of work was because he had close, intimate relationships with a group of artists, and he was writing work for those people. And because that's the alchemy that, you know, that person is going to inspire you to pick a certain work, you know, it makes everything so much more specific. And I was just thinking, it's so funny that you said that, because I was literally just thinking about that, having a conversation about that this morning, that it's that interrelationship between I'm writing this part for someone who is playing Rosalind and knowing what they're good at and knowing what's surprising about them to me as a writer, and what, you know, and that pulls a sort of this kind of incredible specificity out of you as a playwright, I would imagine. And I don't know if I had this experience that actually the first play I ever saw at the Globe Theatre in London, the reconstruction, was As You Like It. It was a production of As You Like It. And David and I went. And I remember so distinctly that there was this one moment and I thought, oh, that's why that, and we had just produced the play. So we had, it was very in my mind where I was like, oh, that is why that line is that long, because that's how long it takes to get across the stage.
Yeah.
No wonder we needed to cut that line, or that line is so hard for us because our stage is so small. So this line needs to take up this time because it's taking that whole place geographically. And that was, I really started thinking about what is that like as a writer to write for the same geography and the same group of artists. Yeah. And, you know, that there is kind of a really, it's sort of a unique era of theater that he was able to do that. And I think that's what pulled out so many wonderful plays. He was obviously incredibly talented and hardworking, but it was just this beautiful alchemy of time and place.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. Independent Shakespeare Company's 20th anniversary production of As You Like It features friends of the pod Jack Lancaster as Orlando and Daisy Tichner as Audrey and LeBeau, and opens this Wednesday night, July 10th, and runs in LA's Griffith Park through September 1st, 2024. Go to iscla.org for more information. Then send us your trip into the green world via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com, or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespearience.com. Thanks as always to failed wrestler Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Bill V. Horn. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Elizabeth Dennehy, who can be seen on screen this summer in the first two chapters of Kevin Costner's epic film Horizon: An American Saga, and is also an Independent Shakespeare Company board member. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 918 2754ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
In Griffith Park, we perform in the Old Zoo, which is the, I think in the 70s, it was the zoo moved, but we have all the old bear caves, and it's a really cool location in the park. And the city is in the process of building a permanent stage there for us. So we've moved a little up the hill just so the planning can go. And I don't think there actually will be construction quite this summer. I think it's starting in September. So we're at the top of the Old Zoo in this beautiful little natural dell with this dry riverbed that runs through it. And this year we're going to have audience on all sides of the production, which we won't be able to do in our permanent stage. So it's going to be in the round, which is really fun, I think, for As You Like It, because you really are getting sort of swirled into this incredible action. And in the hour before the production, we're actually going to do a kind of immersive prologue. So audience members can walk up through the entire Old Zoo site, which is very, very pretty, and kind of experience, you know, some of the backstory of the play that I think is kind of necessary to enjoy it. So you'll meet, you know, Duke Frederick will be handing out business cards, and you'll meet Orlando selling toffee apples from Du Bois Orchards, and you'll meet Charles the Wrestler, and maybe some of the audience is going to get the opportunity to wrestle Charles the Wrestler. And so there's going to be this whole kind of immersive hour before the production. And we really wanted to do that because we do know that so many of our audience are coming to Shakespeare for the first time, that it gives them that chance to kind of meet the characters and settle into the kind of concepts of the play. So hopefully, you know how that happens when you, even now when I see a Shakespeare play, it takes me 10, 15 minutes to kind of retune my ear. And so we wanted to kind of give a little expansive space for the audience to do that. And So I think it'll be very surprising and really, really kind of a very fun production in that way. And lots of music.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company. Reducing expectations since 1981. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.